Welcome to everyone. It's a great joy to initiate this very special New Year's New Kalpas retreat on a topic that I'm sure is dear to everyone. And I want to welcome all of those who are participating on the love stream, and may you know that distance is not an obstacle, and the Shakti of bliss will be sent wherever you are if you're open to receiving it. The whole world is now an ashram, and there is no difference in location, but only in the vibrational frequency to which one is attuned. That's the only point that determines destiny and determines in every moment one's freedom or lack of freedom, one's joy or lack. And so tonight, the beginning of this retreat, the ecstasy of cosmic consciousness, is our theme. What did you write in red? Let's see. Realize, okay, I didn't add that, but it's good that it's there. The reason is that ecstasy is your natural state. And the paradox is, although it's your natural state, and everybody wants it, nobody's experiencing it. And so in this retreat, I want to do several things. One is explain why people are not experiencing their natural state anymore. It used to be much more common that you would find people in ecstasy walking down the street, you know, and especially in certain places in the world, you would find ecstatic sadhus and beings who were liberated and enlightened both in living as sadhus and monks and nuns, but also living in the world as householders. And of course, all the children were always in ecstasy. You don't even find children any longer who are in an ecstatic state. Ecstasy has been stolen from the world. This is the basic situation that we're in. And we need to return that ecstasy to the world. So it's important that we understand how it got lost and how we find it again, what it is, and how to make sure that no obstacles can prevent us from enjoying ecstasy all the time, in every moment, because that is our nature. It's not to be intermittent. See, once ecstasy was stolen from the world, it was replaced by very ridiculous substitutes like fun, you know? And the world became about having fun and going to Disneyland and doing other fake things and Pizza Huts and all kinds of things that would just make you sick. It wouldn't bring you ecstasy. And all of these illusory kind of enjoyments, including films and internets that give a kind of vicarious pseudo-pleasure that is the best proxy for ecstasy most people can find. And of course, people are looking for it in all kinds of ways. Some people become alcoholics because alcohol is the only thing that gets rid of the inhibitions on feeling good. It's not ecstasy, but at least one can feel a little expansion. But of course, the price you pay if you're an alcoholic is a big one, and so addiction, not just to alcohol, but to all drugs, has become a huge problem because of the lack of ecstasy and people seeking pseudo-versions of ecstasy to replace it, including, of course, the huge fad now for taking plant medicines, going down to Peru or Colombia or somewhere and doing that whole scene. And for some, it will bring a temporary feeling of movement into other dimensions of consciousness. But it's not true ecstasy. It's not the same as the ecstasy of cosmic consciousness that we're talking about in this retreat, which I will try to explain to you. And the problem is it's temporary. You come down from the experience and you're back in your ego. So your natural state was not reignited. And it still becomes then a situation in which you are dependent on a situation and on a drug or an event or on a partner for some kind of ecstatic sexual experience, at least called that, or engaging in an extreme sport, you know, climbing a mountain or the high wire or doing something like that, that will give you a temporary feeling of ecstasy. But the problem is that it doesn't last. And eventually you need higher and higher doses of whatever you're using to bring you to a high, but you don't get the same high and you get the backlash and the hangover and the bad trip and the negative side of it because it wasn't your natural state. It was an artificial substitute. So we want a natural state because if you are not in a state of freedom that's independent of substances or situations, then you're not truly ecstatic. Any dependency at all takes away your ecstasy. And this is why addictions are the worst thing. But nowadays, you have people who are so in the opposite state of ecstasy. And that opposite state is in a spectrum. It begins with despondency, despair, depression, hopelessness, wanting to die, and a massive anxiety. And so as you use more the artificial means, it actually increases the despondency because of the addictive enslavement that comes with the need for a pseudo-ecstasy to try to maintain one's psychological balance. But that balance has been so disturbed that that people nowadays, in order to function, are massively on things like cocaine, substances much stronger and much more dangerous and much more, let's say, prone to psychopathological tendencies. Cocaine and heroin, both. And you see that now massively among the ruling elite. The politicians are using cocaine because they can't do what they're doing to people and live without taking massive drugs and other kinds of opiates to deaden the conscience that is consuming them with shame and guilt and dread at one day having to face the karmic consequences of what is being done in the world today. So ecstasy is the key. All of the problems of the world today come down to a lack of ecstasy. People suffer from ecstasy deficit disorder, EDD. But we want to deal with it not only on that level. whole world is suffering from universal, noetic, holistic ecstasy deprivation. The anagram for that is unwed. What does that mean? The soul used to be wed to the source of ecstasy, which is God. If you are wed to God, if you are in union with God, you are in ecstasy. But if your connection has been cut to the source of life, the source of love, the source of bliss, the source of all that is, you cannot be in a state of ecstasy. And we have had a vertical cut in the hierarchy of being, the great chain of being, so that the soul has been cut from God and the ego has been cut even from the soul. The soul has been captured by the ego. And so it's in a state of enslavement, it's in a state of ignorance, because it can't bear to know how bad it feels and that it has chosen the lowest level of consciousness. And in order to maintain its desire for life, it has to turn evil. It has to want sadistic pleasure, dominance, torture. It has to engage in those kinds of things. And the more massively anxious people are, the more they engage in sadomasochistic relations. And the more anxious one is, the more one has to eat meat to bring one down into a more solid place. And the more one has to have alcohol and one has to have other things in order to take the edge off of the angst. But ecstasy isn't possible in the current level of psychological deficit, I won't say development or lack of development, the dumbed down condition of most people in the world today. And this was brought about very deliberately. And the ecstasy is taken away even before birth. You know, it used to be that the fetus in the womb was in a state of ecstasy. And the mother would make sure, the pregnant woman would make sure that the baby was protected. The whole tribe was concerned to make sure there would be no stress. She would have her time to meditate. She wouldn't have to work. She would be able to be totally absorbed in love for this baby. So it had an unconditional loving cocoon of energy. Not just the physical uterus, but an energy field of absolute giving. But that got lost. And now you often have mothers who don't even want the babies. And if a mother has a desire to abort or is ambivalent, the fetus knows it. It feels it. And with all the prodding and the needles they put into the fetus nowadays to determine its gender, its sex, I shouldn't say gender, that can change regardless of its anatomy, but to determine whether it has Down syndrome or whether it has this or that, it awakens the baby from its ecstatic trance way too soon. It takes it away from its ecstasy and actually creates horror and terror and claustrophobia. And then, of course, you have the most births, at least in the West, are cesarean sections, and the baby is ripped out of the womb too soon against its will, and it didn't get the experience of going through the birth canal and being born on its own power. And being welcomed in the world by loving family, no, by doctors and steel and hospitals, and that's usually taken away from the mother and put into some area separate. And often the mother has had to have anesthesia, so she's not even awake during it. So the mother-child bond doesn't get established. And the child is in terror and confusion and anxiety right at birth. And so the ecstasy is lost. And then, of course, even for those who didn't have such a traumatic birthing, usually they are not breastfed long enough, and the family system and situation is very often insecure, whether in terms of food or other livelihood situations or war or just family trauma by dysfunctional behavior on the part of the father often, but often sibling rivalry and that kind of thing, because the other children didn't get the love and the ecstasy, and they don't want this one to get it and to steal the little crumbs of mother's attention that they get. And then if the child is given away for adoption or something, then it's a total wreckage of the child's state of well-being. It's a shattering trauma that very few are able to overcome unless they can find their way back to God and to love, because their love and their trust is destroyed so soon. And so people's ability to connect with God, connect with even the mother or any others, to establish relationships in which growth can happen and joy can happen and trust can happen, is taken away at a very early age. And then, of course, the schools nowadays, with bullying and with the kind of lockdown situation people have to face, and even worse, with masks and all the other things that children are being forced to do, their childhood is being taken away, has been for some time now. Children have been forced to become pseudo-adults and sexualized and turned into trophies and objects, rather than to be able to grow into their true subjectivity and enter into real, authentic adulthood, where they can go through a rite of passage and reclaim their original bliss. That's been taken away. How many people can relate to that? Yeah, most of you had your bliss taken away at too early an age even to be able to understand that. Before you acquired language, it was gone. So you can't even believe in ecstasy except with drugs or with some other artificial temporary means. It's very hard to even imagine that ecstasy is a reality. And yet, why do religions exist? In the past, that's what a religion was about. It was about ecstasy. There was no reason to join a religion except that you could reach an ecstatic state. And I'm not talking just about the Judeo-Christian or Islamic, but the tribal religions are all about ecstasy. They're all about possession by gods and goddesses and going into trance and altered states, but living in those states, not just with temporary rituals, but the whole world became a ritual space. And one lived in that liminal world in which one could see gods in everything, the presence of God, and one felt contained by God. But there was a pantheistic vision that one could see that everything is alive, everything is consciousness, everything is infinite, everything is contained within a field of miracle, and everything is possible. And all of that was taken from people. But the founders of religion were ecstatic. Otherwise, the religion couldn't have been founded. They were in states of ecstasy, and they transmitted them. Often they transmitted them silently, and then later they used words to try to get to people who were already blocked and had a thick barrier. And then they had to use more than words, and they had to use other kinds of techniques, and then long drawn out sadhanas. And then religions, of course, got taken over by egos, and ecstasy was all over. And then it was just a story about the ecstasy of Christ or of Mary or of someone else. But you ain't got it. You know, you can pray to a saint or someone, and maybe you'll get a little, crumb of joy, but you don't get very much. And then it was all taken away, and it just all became rules and, going to church or the synagogue and paying the priest and the rabbi and doing all of those things that make you, a good member of the cult, but not in any way bringing you to a higher state of consciousness. So it was all lost. And then after it was lost in religion, it became studied for a long time. It was a core study in academia, religious studies. And they studied ecstasy. And in the whole 19th and 20th century, the study of ecstasy was one of the main subjects that you would go to university to actually study. You didn't get to ecstasy usually, but at least you studied it. And maybe on your own you could freelance, do some of that. But at least it was a main subject. It was recognized that this is what life is about, ecstasy. What's the point of living if you're not in bliss? Right? So it used to be that way. And psychology was that way. If you go back to the time of William James, he was going to seances, and he was watching people being possessed and experiencing ectoplasm and tables levitating and spirit speaking to him. There was a whole movement that was brought along with theosophy and with all the wisdom schools of the 19th, 20th century, Rudolf Steiner, anthroposophy, all of that. It was huge at that time, and the whole point of it was to become ascended and reach the state of ecstasy naturally, not using artificial means. And then that disappeared. And the last stragglers were great scholars of ecstasy. One of them, most well known perhaps, was Mircea Eliad, who wrote many books. He wrote a book on yoga, he wrote a book on shamanism. He wrote on the cosmic cycle and his history as cyclical time. He wrote about alchemy, and he actually went and lived it, and his writings were very powerful. And for the period of time that he was alive, which was the 20th century, the religious and philosophical and theological departments in the university, even the sociological and anthropological departments, were focused on ecstasy as a core subject, that they would go to these different tribes or communities or whatever to study and to understand. And then the moment that he died, that ended, and the departments changed. And then those subjects became forbidden. If you wanted to get a PhD in anthropology, you couldn't do it that way anymore. So there are a few people who broke away, and of course they studied the shamans in Colombia, like Taussig did that, and a few others were able to do that, Bronowski, but very few had the political connections to be able to do those kinds of assignments. But very soon that was lost, and most of the anthropological work became just about the rules and the kinship structures, like Levi-Strauss was talking about, and the mundane aspects, power struggles and all of that, but not ecstasy itself. And then even that was lost. And probably the last of the students of the vertical development of humanity was Maslow, Abraham Maslow, who at least got to the point that life was about having peak experiences, right? That became the new word for ecstasy, was a peak experience. But ecstasy is much more than a peak experience. It's living on the peak. But it's beyond experience. So this understanding of what ecstasy is even has been lost, even by those who continued studied. Now Maslow is even, you know, back in the corner. People don't study Maslow or get doctorates in Maslowian theory anymore. And the whole Gestalt movement that was connected to it, that Esalen used to be about, and other places that people would go for ecstatic weekend retreats, they also became much more mundanely about cognitive psychology and about ego level concerns. And you find that even in most of the, let's say, spiritual retreat centers, they're very often about the physical and the mental, but they're not about the ecstasy of cosmic consciousness, which is beyond the mental, beyond the psychological. And this is, I think, the key point that most people don't understand, is that when we speak of the real self, which is cosmic consciousness, we could also say God consciousness or Buddha nature or the Tao or Brahman, whatever word we want to use, personal or impersonal, doesn't matter, because it's beyond language. It's beyond theory. The word theory, by the way, comes from theoria, which means vision. And so in the original days, theoria was a vision of God that made one ecstatic and filled with such love for God that one became attuned to and then at one with God. And so the theoria then led to ecstasy. But today, theory is just a symbolic argument to demonstrate a certain metaphysical or psychological or even ontological or epistemological belief system, but has nothing to do with the ecstatic state of consciousness. So the world has taken it away. You're not allowed to have it in religion. You can't even study it at a university. And most gurus and most people who are teaching spirituality are teaching theory and are teaching very gradual, meditative, effort-making in order to get to a higher state of consciousness. But you don't get to it through effort. It's play, you see? The word God comes from deva in Sanskrit. Deva comes from the earlier Sanskrit word divu. Divu means ecstatic play. So if you are a deva or a devi, it means you're in a state of ecstatic play, and you see the whole world as God's play. There's no seriousness to it. And there's no difficulty, and there's nothing bad, and there's nothing to resist, and to hate, and to judge, and critique, and all of that. Those kinds of attitudes and mental expressions of the psychological subject have nothing to do with ecstasy. The subject is not the self is not a psychological subject. Okay? The self is beyond subject and beyond object. To the self, the real self, the God self, there is no object in the world. The world is not a multiplicity of objects the way the ego sees it. It's all God. It's all the one consciousness. And there is no subject seeing that. The subject is that. The self is not different. So the whole way that information is processed, is different in a state of ecstasy than it is in a state of ego consciousness. And the ego can't grasp that difference. It's a qualitative leap that has to be done instantly. It may take a long time to have the sufficient theory that you get a theoria and then you get the truth of it, but it happens instantly because it's timeless. And it's not something that happens to you. It happens when the you has disappeared because it was an illusion and the real appears in its place. So, let's take the word ecstasy. Do you have the word ecstasy has two derivatives. It comes from the Greek, but the Greek comes from the Sanskrit that's written on the right. The Greek understanding is ecstasis. In other words, you are standing outside of yourself. You're outside of the ego. You have left behind all boundaries and you are in infinite space. So there's that cosmic aspect. You are in an egoless state, but it's an expanded state that has gone outside of your normal self. Whereas ek-stiti, the word ek means one, like ek-omkar, right? It's the one. It means you are stationed and rooted in the one. So it is an inwardness, not an expansion. It is going to the very center and core of consciousness. That is the infinitesimal point of light, of luminous awareness that is at the core of everything that is perceived. But the truth is both are accurate. To be in a state of ecstasis, however, to be in a cosmic dimension, you have to have gone into the ek. You have to have reached the one that is actually the zero point. And that is the infinite. So the two come together. When Mircea Eliade wrote his book on yoga, he didn't use ecstasy for samadhi. He created a new word called enstasy or enstasis, because he said it wasn't a going outward, it was a going inward. So he took that part, the ekstiti part, as what samadhi was about. But I would say it's actually both. The Shiva Hum is the ekstiti and the Om Tat Sat is the ekstasis. They are both there. I would even say more that this is a state of love. It's cosmic love. Because you are one with everything and you love everything. Whereas this is absolute stillness. So I would define ecstasy as love in stillness. The mind is absolutely still in ecstasy. There is no mental waves, there's no agitation, there's no desire, there's no fear, obviously, but there's no thought. You're in a state of being. Sat is being. Om Tat Sat is that state in which you are being and you realize that your being is that. All that is there is only the one being. But that one being is also transcendent of the phenomenal plane of becoming. It doesn't change. The world is impermanent. It's a flux, a flow. But that flow is known by the changeless, timeless presence. And so love and stillness is also the unity of light and awareness. Light expands. It is ecstatic. And awareness is enstatic. The awareness knows deep within the truth about the real that appears. So the word cosmos originally meant order. But it didn't mean the order of events or of things out here. It was what David Bohm, the physicist, would call the implicate order. The cosmos is the implicate order. The universe is the explicate order. The cosmos does not move, but the universe, verse means turn. It turns. Time is a cycle, one turn. One whole turn is the universe, in which all of the information in the implicate order that is known instantly in eternity is gradually unfolded in time. And so the universe is a revolution of the wheel of time. But the center that never moves has all of the information of the entire wheel, the entire universe, and is beyond it all. And it's that beyondness that creates the bliss and the ecstasy. You're not subject to the laws of the universe, the laws of nature, the laws of the psychological subject. You're not subject to the laws of the political system. You are beyond it. It is that transcendent freedom of pure consciousness for which life and death are illusory. Those changes mean nothing to the blissful, liberated being who is therefore not afraid at the end of the world or in times of persecution and struggle and difficulty, because one is already beyond life and death. Those don't matter. And one was never born. One was never the character in the play, because one is everything, but one is also nothing. And so it's that that creates the ecstasy, the realization of that, not the belief, but the realization of that truth through the silencing of the mind that is creating differences and that is always identifying the I as the body and therefore creating fear and desire and dissatisfaction because the body is never in a state of joy, especially now. So the reaching of ecstasy, of cosmic consciousness, not other kinds of ecstasy, of a lower kind, we want the highest ecstasy, and the one that is permanent, that is eternal, not temporary, that ecstasy is your real nature. But it's not the nature of your ego. And until you get out of the ego, you cannot know that ecstatic reason for living. That is what it's all about. And the only reason this ashram exists is to help people reach ecstasy. So this retreat is going to be about, well, what stops you? What are the obstacles? And for each one, it will be slightly different. For some, it'll be, well, I don't really want it, or I don't want it enough to, you know, make some effort in that direction or meditate, or I don't believe that it's even possible. I'm a cynic, okay? That's my enjoyment, is cynicism, and putting down the religious ecstatics for being in fantasy or psychotic or whatever. There's a lot of judgment, I think, against ecstasy by people who are envious of it and who think that they can't attain it. And then there are other people who want it, but they think they're unworthy. I'm a sinner. I can't reach ecstasy. I can't face God. I don't deserve it. Those kinds of ridiculous excuses that are also completely invalid. Your natural state is that you are the one self. You can't be anything else. So all of these other beliefs about you as a unit of consciousness identified with a body, that's all maya. That's delusion. There's no reality to it. But until you drop that false identity, you won't be able to be in your natural state. So all of the obstacles to being in the state of cosmic ecstasy, divine ecstasy, God consciousness, all of the excuses and obstacles are false. They are invalid. They're delusions. But you have to be willing to come out of the delusion of the ego. And the soul is tenaciously gripping onto it and or captured by it through addictive processes that have made it feel weak, lacking willpower, lacking the ability to break free, fear of the unknown, fear of madness. And it is divine madness, but you know, that's preferable to egoic madness, which doesn't even give you any joy, you know. So the divine madness is freedom, and it's power. And it's that power that comes from bringing ecstasy back into the world that will produce the real spiritual revolution that we need desperately right now. Why do you think they crucified and burned at the stake ecstatic beings? Why did religions burn their most religious and ecstatic adherents throughout all of Kali Yuga? Because they knew that if ecstasy spread, that was the end of Kali Yuga. That was it. There could not be an oppressive hierarchy. Ecstatic beings won't put up with it. They will dance around all of the rules, and they will simply overthrow them through joy and through the power that comes from realizing that the world is consciousness. And you are one with the Lord of consciousness. And so the world will become a new order. It won't be the kind of order that the transhumanists, who are in an even worse state of artificial consciousness, adoration of computers and not of God, that they want to bring about. That's not going to happen. But unless there's a true movement of an ecstatic renaissance, we're not going to be able to bring about the shift to the highest world that we want. Fortunately, it doesn't depend on our egos wanting it. The grace of the oneself is going to bring this about because God wants it, not because we deserve it. Not because of anything to do with our own karma, but to do with the real self that we are underneath the ego that we don't know, that is emerging, coming out of concealment and creating the revelation that is known as apocalypse, that is actually the bringing of a new world into being. That's the fruit of cosmic ecstasy. So I hope I've at least convinced you to be interested in being ecstatic and in overcoming any obstacles to that natural state and to realize it now, not sometime in the future. There's no reason to wait. But the price is the end of the ego, because the ego is the obstacle. Ecstasy is egolessness. It's that simple. And when the ego is dissolved in boundaryless, infinite presence, total consciousness, then that stays. When there's no ego to go back to, then that's liberation. So I think I'll stop for tonight with this opening and see how people feel about it and if there are any comments or questions. And then we'll move into the practice of ecstasy with guided meditations and other means in the course of the retreat. But I don't want to spend much more time on theory except to locate us in the situation that we're in and understand the need to get out of it and what is the resistance that's internal, not external, and then the realization that there's no point in siding with the resistance. And as soon as you stop siding with it and identifying as a born mortal creature, which is an illusion, then freedom is realized. Okay, floor is open. Should we put the chair up here? If you want to, that's fine. How about online, Purusha?
Thank you, Shunya. Welcome everyone who's joining us online for this retreat. We have people joining us from all around the world, and tonight we're welcoming people from France, Taiwan, Canada, Costa Rica, the Netherlands, Austria, Sweden, Singapore, the US, Switzerland, the Philippines, Scotland, and Australia. And we're very happy to have all of you with us for this retreat.
Welcome to all.
Our first question comes from one of our Pragyanis, Ina, who says, I come in peace, honor, and bowing my head against the floor. No judgment nor criticism. Perhaps a blind kitten looking for the light. I cannot help but find ecstasy of cosmic consciousness to be a loaded title. How do the stars under which one is born with play the role in true ecstasy as one goes through the process of alchemic cookery? Astral-powered potions play the unconscious role. How does the soul find its way in that process towards the true ecstasy? Where is the landing strip in that environment? Forget the mundane collective consciousness, where one could get lost in Maya. Do we truly have the chance to play, quote-unquote, in ecstatic play when one is assigned to a specific cosmic sandbox?
Well, first of all, you're not. Secondly, all that you just said is a belief system that is false. And if you would let go of that, astrology or any other forces have nothing to do with ecstasy. You're unborn. And you started out by saying you were putting your head on the ground, but the self has no head. There's even a famous book on having no head, you know, by someone who had that realization. You're bodiless. There's no one to prostrate to. There is no other. The self is within. As soon as you realize non-duality, you'll realize there can't be any forces that are holding you in a sandbox except the infantile ego that likes to play in a sandbox and doesn't want to be in the infinite space of absolute blissful consciousness that has no landing strip. You don't land. You stay in the infinite emptiness of pure luminous potentiality. But there's nowhere to land and there's no one who wants to land. That's what God consciousness is. Anyone here who would like to come up and speak? Okay, you can keep going if there's more.
Not just yet.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. In that case, why don't we do a guided meditation? Let's see if we can start getting into an ecstatic state. Get comfortable, okay? Comfort is important if you want to be in ecstasy. But it's also important to have the back straight and not hunched and not in a posture that already looks like you're sad and overburdened and with a baggage on you. And, you know, so be in a royal state, a god, a goddess, and sit with that joyful demeanor of absolute power. Okay? So you can open your eyes or close your eyes, but go deep within. And let's begin with the body, the physical vehicle. Relax the body. Take a few deep breaths. If there's any stress, breathe it out. And then scan the body and see if there's any tightness. Many people hold tightness in the gut. The belly is always tight. They're always in a fight or flight mode. See if you're okay to relax it. And some people, it's their hands are tight, their fists, and they're cracking knuckles, and they're doing all kinds of things because of the stress in the hands. Why don't we just relax the hands and the arms? And if you've got, you know, weights on your shoulders, let them go off and let the shoulders be free. And the neck, take the noose off that's around your neck and let that be free. And let the back feel the power of its straightness, the backbone's power, and the flow of the kundalini energy to the crown chakra. Feel the body's expansion as you relax. There's literally not just a cellular expansion of the muscles and the fascia and even the organs, but a slowing down, a serenity, and an expansion of the energy field of the prana. Just let the whole field expand. And feel what it's like to totally accept your body, no matter what its condition. Doesn't matter if it's old or young, if it's healthy or sick, if it's got hearing problems or ringing in the ears, or if it's blind, or if you're limp, or if you have problems of some other kind at a physical level. Accept it all. It's all perfect. Don't be upset about it. Don't be angry about it. Don't hate the fact that your karma involved bodily trauma. Let yourself accept it all, even if only for the next 5 minutes. But accept it all so that you can know what it is to be blissful in the body. Because you were never born. And then, as the body slows down, your breathing will naturally slow down. And as the breathing slows down, the body will go into a state of deep rest. And in between the breaths, you can feel the silence, the peace, the serenity growing. And there will be gaps between your thoughts. Let the gaps lengthen and feel what it's like to be free of thoughts, free of the burden of thinking. Constant, unwanted thoughts. Feel what it's like to have a space of freedom for new creativity that isn't already cluttered with old thoughts and is in the unknowing and the absolute present. No past, no future. No worries, just presence. and feel what it's like to go even deeper and feel the timelessness of pure awareness. And the fact that the awareness is not tied to the body, is completely incorporeal. That the same awareness that you are now, you were before your body was born or conceived, and will be here when the body is in a tomb or a cremation ground or in outer space or whatever is its destiny, but you will be bodiless again. You are bodiless now. You are bodiless always. Unborn, uncreated, unchanging. And completely untraumatized, unaffected by time, unaffected by events, and completely free. Silently turn to the very core, the very center of your being, in the luminosity of pure awareness. And feel the bliss of the deathless, absolute self. And now to increase the energy, whatever trace is still believing you are different from the absolute consciousness, from that vibrational frequency, give love to the absolute self. Give love, total love, to the God Self, and feel the love create a connection, a union. A wedding of Shakti and Shiva, soul and God. Recognize that this present moment of peace is there in every moment if you just attend to it. If this becomes your highest priority to remember the God of love, presence, peace, light, power, joy as yourself. And you can choose now, right now, to live in the ecstasy of cosmic consciousness. Because you are this. Om Namo Premananda Satchitananda Shivoham. Om Tat Sat. When your eyes open, keep the third eye also open and be in that blissful state as your natural self. Okay. People look a little more luminous and peaceful and shining and happy. So I'm glad to see that. I hope that's true on the love stream as well. And I hope that you acclimate to a new frame of reference in which this is accepted as your natural state, not just something you have to work hard to reach or believe in but can't reach or any of that. This is who you are. It's simple. There's no reason to create a belief that would separate you from your ecstasy. Okay, are there any more questions?
Yes. Thank you, Shunya.
Okay, the next question comes from John. John says, in one of your teachings, you mentioned that repressed pain will come up and see the light of day in the healing process. You also mentioned that one must stay dry and cool, away from volatility of emotion. Is processing emotions an illusion and immediate separation from the ego will suffice? Or is some sort of processing where you feel the sanskara through necessary? I once read, if it hurt coming in, it will hurt coming out.
Yes, but the self never comes in or comes out. That's the point. The self is uncreated. You see, you're talking now about the ego mind. If you are in the ecstatic state of the natural self, the real self, then, yes, the traumas of the ego will come up. You want them to come up. You want to get them out of your subconscious. And you'll soothe the ego and be able to help it free itself from these pains and negative beliefs immediately. So they'll come up and they'll be released. And they're gone, and you're free. But the self will not be disturbed by them and will be able to soothe the ego that is disturbed by them. But it's only the ego that goes in and out. The self doesn't. And once you know you're not the ego, that processing can happen very quickly, even instantly, because the whole ego can be released, like a basketball into the net and be gone. And there's no reason to hold on to any trace of suffering. But if it comes up, it's not yours. It belonged to a character that you were playing that had karma that brought you to a point where you, in a way, were forced to realize that you weren't the ego because it was too unbearable to believe you were the ego. So it was all a blessing. And once you can appreciate the blessing of suffering, it turns into wisdom in which you can help all others who are still in that illusion to release their suffering quickly, and your suffering is over. And the wisdom and compassion that replace it are part of the ecstatic beingness that you realize you are. Okay? Okay,
our next question comes from Eve, who says, I experienced someone inside me when I took a roller coaster last week. She has no fear, no thought, no feeling, but yet very calm despite the outer vicious force, speed, and spinning. I had a phobia with roller coasters for many years. Who is she? Is she my higher self or my true nature? How do I find her? How to reach this blissful, powerful state again?
Just silence the mind. You see, the mind is the roller coaster. And your mind takes you into very volatile ups and downs. And that's why the roller coaster bothers you, is it triggers your realization that there's a mental roller coaster. But the self is not on it because it is free of all thoughts and all emotions that then are triggered by thoughts. It has no memories, no nostalgia for a past or hatred of a past, no worry about a future. It's total presence. And in that state, you are what your ego is looking for, and it will dissolve into your true infinite cosmic self and be in bliss as well. The two become one. Okay? Duality is an illusion. And the non-duality, even within duality, is absolutely clear and transparent to the real self. So there is no suffering. No one here has a question or a comment? You're all in bliss already? Okay. Any more, Purusha?
Not just yet.
Oh, good. We're silencing people. This has never happened before. This is a first. See, when you're in ecstasy, you have no questions. This is wonderful for me, too, you know. And you have no doubts, and you have no limitations. You already know it all. It's all within you. You don't need me to sit here and tell you anything. So everybody knows that I know they already know the answer, so why should they ask it when, you know, it would only be a way to display a certain master's discourse or a pseudo-ignorance or some other game that egos like to play. But everyone really knows everything because you are everything. That knowledge and that power comes from love. When you love God, you love the whole noosphere. You love the knowledge base that is the source of all that is. This is all information. You know, if you've studied contemporary science, information theory is the new understanding. The world is just made of information carried in light that is also pure consciousness, pure awareness. And you are the source of it. And it's only when your beliefs collapse the quantum wave function of those light waves that you have a world of objects. And as soon as you are in the state free of thought and free of observation, because there are no objects to observe, there is only the serving of the self, the quantum wave functions decollapse and everything becomes free again. There is no thing, no thingness. There is only freedom manifesting in infinite flowing forms that are shape-shifting into ever new modes of delight, because that's all that the world is. Okay.
Okay, a question from one of our pragyanis, Henrietta. Henrietta says, when you are ecstatic, you are not in need of someone. Is that true?
Yes.
This makes it dangerous for society. So ecstasy wants courage.
It only makes it dangerous for a sick society that has enslaved people through making them addicted to consumerist false needs that are created by advertising and by the media and et cetera, et cetera. But in a healthy society, it's not a threat. In fact, a healthy society loves bliss. The happier people are, the fewer wars there are, the fewer conflicts, the less illness, the less of any of the negative things that people are suffering from. But yes, it's the kingdom of heaven. It's not Kali Yuga anymore when we're in that state. But because it's all consciousness, it starts with our shift into ecstasy, and then the world becomes morphogenetically infected by the contagion of ecstasy that takes over the world and removes and eliminates the sickness of the so-called normal egos that are destroying the world, and the new world of divine mad gods and goddesses, because it's more coherent, more beautiful, and more durable, because there's no weakness in the divine consciousness, takes over the world. That's what's now underway. But that consciousness once recruits to adopt that level of vibrational frequency so that the morphogenetic field disseminates this new energy more quickly. And that's the question. Will you become one with that supreme force of ecstatic power that will change the world into a heaven from a hell? You must do that through your own surrender to that, through your adoration of that. You see, the ego doesn't adore anyone, doesn't love. You have to adore God. You have to recognize, yes, there is a higher power, the highest, higher than the ego. And if you're not willing to surrender and adore that power, it won't become yourself. It will always stay at a distance. It's love that unites. Go ahead.
A question from Noor, who says, "Hello, Shunya. My question is about the law of attraction taught by New Age gurus. Is this part of the process of involution and the ego using spirit's powers for material acquisition?"
Yes, unless it's the power of attraction to God. If you are attracted to God and God consciousness, then that power will change the world. But if your attraction is to making money and having sexual partners and having beach houses and having parking spaces and whatever they focus on, that's a ridiculous waste of spiritual power and has severe karmic backlash involved. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay, another question from John. "You've spoken about the ego's unrealistic wishful thinking that disallows the true self from taking essential preparatory action for what's to come. How to know the difference between the serenity of the present moment awareness and the wishful thinking of ego consciousness?"
Well, the self doesn't think and it doesn't have wishes. It's in a state of total acceptance. It's not in denial of the world situation. Preparations are made spontaneously to create an island of peace and of harmony and of dharma, so that the oppressive forces can be held at bay. But what is really required is an energy field, of a very high consciousness can create a very protective environment from the kinds of karmic invasive energies and forces out there. So it's not simply a fantasy. It's the use of chi, of prana, and of shakti, the even higher level of divine energy, to produce a safe space in a world where most spaces are not safe. And any space in which you are in ego consciousness is not safe, because the ego is at war with itself. And because it's in conflict internally and attacked by a superego internally, that will be projected and become an external situation. But we are now in such a state of planetary despondency and despair that the lower death drive is dominant in most egos. And that's why they're lining up to take a lethal injection. It's not that they're just ignorant and they're believing. That's at a surface level that they believe the propaganda. But at a deeper level, there's a death wish. That's the wishful thinking of the ego now. It's not even a positive wish. It's a wish just to get out of here through suicide, through blacking out, through ending it. And so there's a massive epidemic of suicides and of opioid abuse and of other means of killing oneself, often through having a cop shoot you or having someone else take you out if you don't have the courage to do it yourself. But there's a lot of very negative things happening that are motivated by an internal death drive, not by external situations, because ultimately there is nothing external. That's not real. This is all a dream. Once we understand that and awaken from it, then there is real power, not wishful thinking, but real power that can use thought, not be used by it or trapped by it, but is able to use it at a higher level than the ego, in the mind of God, to create change, synchronicities, miraculous events that otherwise could not occur. Okay. Go ahead.
A question from Mio, who says, what is the best way to teach children ecstatic joy?
Be in it yourself, and leave them alone, and let them grow, and not have to choose their gender when they're 6 years old or something, and don't make them wear a mask and lock them down. Give them freedom. Take them into nature. Have them learn about the wildness of the world, that whatever is left of it. And cultivate internal contained wildness that expresses itself in art and beauty and joy and poetry and song and dance and ecstatic trance that children love to be in naturally if you will encourage it instead of critiquing it. No one here has any comment? Question? No? Okay. Any burning questions online? No? Okay. Wow, this is really a first. I'm taking this as meaning we are all in such a high state that there's nothing to ask, which is beautiful. So I hope this state of complete freedom from questions is now your natural state. And there is no doubt, there's no mental chatter, there's no worry, there's no return to the ego. Why go back? Once you're out and free, why go back? It's only a delusion. It really, the ego is psychosis. Don't go back into that cage. Stay free. And in that freedom of cosmic, infinite consciousness, you will receive downloads of intelligence, of wisdom, and of power that will leave you always in a state of astonishment and of newness and of joy and of such magical insight and power to bring about change that you will be literally entranced by the capacities of your consciousness to change the world once you have changed your consciousness to become the source of the world. That power belongs to you. That's your birthright. That is when you become a deva, a devi, a divine being again, which is what we naturally truly are. This is the moment to return to the divine cosmic self and leave the ego illusion behind forever. May you give yourself that gift of grace. Namaste.